Hi, and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show here on the UK Health Radio Network. I'm Atik.
And I'm Nyla.
We're both professional registered homeopaths, and between us have over 25 years of professional practice in this field of healing.
The Homeopathy Health Show is the voice of homeopathy on radio and podcasts around the world, promoting and raising awareness of this truly unique system of healing and healthcare, which is suitable for all ages, young and old.
Every week, we invite guests from the world of homeopathy to come and share their experiences, their work, offer insights, and essentially talk all things homeopathy.
Visit www.ukhealthradio.com to listen now. To find out more about us, you can visit us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk. And whilst you are there, do subscribe to our newsletter.
Be inspired.
And join the conversation.
So let's begin today's show here on the UK Health Radio Network, the world's number one talk health radio.
Real feel-good radio.
Hi, and welcome to the show. This is part two of our special two-part with Jeremy Scher on the topic of nature, evolution and healing, and continues the conversation from last week.
See them on this remedy for the next 30 years. I want that remedy to change eventually. Because every remedy is like going to school, class one, class two, class three. So would you want your kid to go to class one every year for the rest of their life? No. Once you've had the remedy enough, lesson learned, susceptibility fulfilled. Now, what's the next lesson? How can we progress up that mountain? Now, the real art of homeopathic practice and science is understanding the second prescription, the follow-up prescription. And that implies that it's not one so-called similimum constitutional remedy from now till forever. I love it when I give a patient a good remedy and they're doing really well. I love that moment where I see that remedy finishing and the next remedy starting to appear. And I know that we are graduating from class one to class two. Oh. That is the most sophisticated part of homeopathy. That is the peak of the practicing art, to know how to take that through. Now, what happens when people are concentrated on, I want to find that one mythical unicorn similimum for the patient that will be the remedy for all their life that they needed all their life? You give a remedy and it doesn't do it. It does a little bit, it doesn't change their whole life. Here comes the problem. These people who are taught like that go back to the drawing board looking for the first mythical unicorn similimum remedy. As a consequence, they never climbing up the mountain. They are going round and round the mountain looking. And I've seen this because I get many cases from many practitioners where people have had hundreds of remedies, but they're still in the first prescription. They're still going around the base of the mountain looking for the mythical unicorn that will fly them to the top in one quick leap. And who needs that? Who wants that? It's, you know, patients have to imagine you could take your one-year-old kid and say, he has all the knowledge downloaded to you, go to university. You've got the knowledge now, right? You connect them to your hard drive, AI, everything in, and now you say you're ready to go. You've got the knowledge to go to university. They've got the knowledge. They're not ready. They haven't walked the talk. They haven't integrated the lesson into their life. You know, if a person needed Aurum Metallicum from the day they were born till now, and you give them that remedy, and they take it, it's going to take them 2-3 years to learn how to be healthy again and how not to have that Aurum Metallicum thing. But when they've learned the lesson, giving them time that they need, then they can graduate to the next prescription. But what is it? It's not the same. It's not another first prescription. You're a third of the way up the mountain now. Look for the signs how to progress. And this is why, you know, this it pains me a bit to see that. It pains me more than when I see all the protocol people to see these people lost in their in their search for that non-existent mythical constitutional remedy. Now, let me differentiate one thing over here, because Naila asked, is there a constitutional remedy, is there a similimum? It may well be that a patient coming the first time needs the same remedy today as they needed all their life. Maybe 10 lifetimes they've needed that remedy. Yes. And maybe you give them that remedy. Good. It doesn't mean that's the remedy that they need for the rest of their life. Once you've got on the track, then things are going to change with time. So if you want to say there's a constitutional remedy for birth till now, cool. But if you've got, they've got that remedy, susceptibility and direction change. And to be in the here and now as a practitioner, because you know, it's not just the patient that has to be here and now. If the practitioner is not here and now, then they are not going to help the patient get here and now. So if the practitioner hasn't taken the ride with the patient, let's say it's a partial similar. Now, 95% of prescriptions, 98 are partial similars, if they work at all, you know. They are not similars, and that's fine. Hanuman dedicates paragraph 162 to 184 to explaining these partial similars, why we give them and what happens and how you deal with it. So now the practitioner has to be here and now. And if you read those paragraphs, count the amount of time Hanuman says now in those paragraphs, because he's all the time saying, you have to be here and now, not because you went to a seminar and the teacher gave a remedy and the patient walked off into the sunset, met their soulmate and won the lottery, and and that's the end of the story, goodbye. Doesn't happen. You know what? I don't want it to happen. It's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a journey of healing that each person will go through, that will be the most efficient, interesting, nice journey they can. That's the path that I am on. You know, I might be wrong, but I know one thing. If I'm wrong, I'm following Hanuman to the letter in everything I do. So if I'm wrong, then Hanuman was wrong and Hanuman wasn't wrong. So I, it's not me. I'm standing on giant shoulders and shouting, you know, and those are Hanuman's. It's the same thing. I've just finished writing this book with Wendell O'Reilly about epidemics. There's a lot to say about treating epidemics in the homeopathic way, according to the way Hanuman and his followers taught. A lot of philosophy, a lot of technicalities, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm following to the letter. The fact that I'm using modern technology doesn't mean that the principles have changed. So I know, I mean, at least I'm in good company. I might be wrong, but I'm in good company.
No, it's amazing what you've said, because I read your article that is on HPathy on epidemics, and I read it in one go. It was so beautifully written. Cannot wait for your book. And I'll go back to my question about constitution or the similimum, because what I always thought about, I am giving them a similar remedy to what they are presenting to me, and not a similar remedy that is not here. I don't want to dig out what is not there. Let's just go with what is in front of me. And then this is another thought. I'm just a student, so something to learn, but this is what I was thinking. For example, a patient, if I'm thinking about miasm, if a person is more on a syphilitic state, I don't want them to give a remedy that is always syphilitic. If my patient is getting better, that means that they are going to go back to their psora, and then further, I don't know where it goes, but it has to, they need to get better. They don't have to be in the state of despair all the time. Whenever they're unwell and they're going to the state of despair, am I actually helping them? I'm just palliating. I'm just giving them something that gets them out of the state, and then they go back there again.
So your bottom line, I understand what you're saying, but bottom line, what is the question?
What I'm saying is, I'm also what you are saying is very helpful for me to understand, because it kind of answers the question that has been nagging me. Am I?
I understand.
Is it the minimum? If I'm giving, for example, I'm giving someone carcinosin, and I don't want them to be in a carcinosin state all the time. They need to get better. They need to be there for themselves. They need to feel themselves, be happy, content. So if they keep on needing the carcinosin, I'm not doing them any service. I feel it's beautifully
You
said.
are doing them a service,
Yeah.
and healing is not something that's going to happen with one remedy and immediately everything
Yeah.
is gone.
Yes.
That's part of the delusion. I call it the first year homeopathic delusion. First you're in school, first year of practice, because that's the cases they're going to show you. They show you that wonderful case where you gave a remedy and everything was better. It's not. It's a journey. And they will bounce back into that despair, and things will happen, and you have to walk it with them, seeing at every step of the way, where are they now?
Yeah.
Do they need that same remedy again? Has the time come to change? You know, it's you're setting up with the patient on a journey, and you're going to walk with them as long as they want to walk with you, and track them in their here and now. So it's, and it's not going to be perfect roses, you know, immediately and all the way. It's just that you try and choose the most efficient path, but there are many pathways up the mountain. Like if I said to you, if you ask me now, you know, how do I get to the supermarket? I'll show you five different ways to get to the supermarket. Some might be shorter, some might have better gardens, some might have a dog on the way. But you know, you can navigate. It's about navigation.
Now, Jeremy, that is the such a deep question actually that Nyla's asked, and for a moment I was a student and I absolutely loved it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what it feels like to be in a room with Jeremy Scher. So hey, absolutely phenomenal, so much knowledge. But I have another question for you, and this is very, very rare, but we have actually gone into part two, so technically one question per episode, I think, is allowed, right? So my question to you, if are we born in a state, and is there any such thing as we cannot not be in a state? And the only thing that stops us from understanding if we are in a state is going to a homeopath, but we may never need to do that. Does that make sense?
It more or less it does, but let's think about that word state, because it's a word. You know, Wenda O'Reilly, my good friend, was here. She's working on her organon, and I'm working on my organon, which are quite different and complementary. Hers is a precise linguistic translation, and mine is an adaptation to modern world. Paragraph 9 says in Wenda's book, it said, in the healthy state of man.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Now, we sat here on a Friday night after a meal and spent an hour and a half arguing about the healthy state of man. And oh, I said,
what is the healthy state of man?
There is no state of man, because state comes from the same root as static. It means things are fixed in the healthy state of man. In fact, I say that is not a good translation, because this is what I said to Wenda, because healthy cannot be a state. Healthy cannot be static. Healthy, as we said before, has to be a moving thing, dynamic. Mm. When we say dynamic, it's exactly the opposite to state. State means stuck. State is pathology. State is sickness, because it means that a person is stuck all day long. I can go into that despair for a minute any day of the week. The question is, will I come back out of it? You know, will I move? It's a state implies that there's a pattern that you fix, that you're in it all the time. Now, you will never find a person's remedy if they're not in a state of sickness, because they'll be changing all the time. They'll say, today I love fresh air, but yesterday I hated it. Today I desire ice cream, but yesterday I wanted curry. What are you going to do with that? You need somebody to be stuck in a state of fixedness in order to find a pattern, in order to find the remedy for them. Mm. How does a lion catch a zebra? It knows that the zebra comes to drink out of the pond every day at 6 and 12 minutes. It just comes at 6 and 11 minutes, waits for the zebra, and it gets it. Mm. That's a person in pathology, because a healthy person is dynamic all the time. So that's why, you see, my organ does not say in the healthy state of man. My organ, and I'll tell you exactly what it says in paragraph 9, the most important paragraph of the organ, says in the healthy flow of life, rather than in the healthy condition of man. So the healthy flow of life implies a totally different thing, as we spoke about before. However, as you both said, a person is born as a baby in a certain state. That means that they are born with a sickness already. Mm. They are stuck in a pattern, whatever pattern it is, what they inherited from their parents and God the moment that they were conceived. They are stuck in that pattern, and then you can go to the pond at 6 and 12 minutes and identify that pattern, and then take those rubrics in the repertory, which you know are repetitive. And your aim is to move them from that state into the healthy flow of life. Mm. Mm. That is the name of the game, as I've already said before in this podcast. Mm. So, yes, people are born into a state. Now, if you identify that state and give them a remedy, and it's a good one, and you repeat it over a year, 2 years, 5 years, 2 weeks, and then that state will change. Mm. And they'll be in a different state, but slightly more flowing, slightly more advanced. They'll have moved from class one to class two, and you will move with them and be with them there, and then work on the next stage. Now, it's much harder to be a high school teacher than a primary school teacher. And it's much harder to be a university teacher than a primary school, than a kindergarten teacher. So the second prescription, as they progress from class one to university, it's more sophisticated, it's more delicate. Ken says The second prescription is the highest art of the homeopath. And you know, so as they're changing that state that they were born in. Now, practically speaking, babies are born in a state because they come in with a pattern. But it's difficult to perceive that pattern until they start to turn from a bud into a flower, into a tree, and then you can start to see who they are. So you're prescribing for those kids. You're not going to get it right on the nail, and that's fine. It's built into homeopathy. Homeopathy is the law of similars, not the law of similimums. So you will give them a remedy, a pulsatilla, and a that, and a that, and it's okay. You'll move them on. You'll nudge them up the hill. I hope that answers the question.
Absolutely does. Very, very deep and very profound. Naila, I know you're buzzing to ask. Go.
Yeah, I did. I do have a question because I listened to your lecture on triticum, the coccoides. And in your poem, you mentioned in the time when everything was good and the king was eating honey and bread. And nowadays we are seeing so many people who are not or who are not able to eat bread, who cannot digest that wheat. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, is there anything, a link to the old wheat, the new wheat, the state of the mankind, that they cannot digest those basic things that people were eating in their beautiful times, the honey and the bread?
Yes, it was beautiful times. But, you know, what is a triticum dicocoides? And why was it only discovered in 1910? It's the wild wheat, which is very, very hard to identify and to find. And it just so happened that this Israeli botanist was traveling on horseback in the Galilee, and he saw it there. And he identified it, because anyone else who saw it wouldn't know what it was. But it was, you know, it's very rare to find that. So he discovered it. If he was alive today, he would have got the Nobel Prize for that. But what is the story over there? The story is that, look, when did Sora begin? Sora, what is a Sora thing? To my mind, I mean, obviously it's not a one point, but if we can define one point where Sora really began, is at the beginning of the agricultural revolution, which is about, let's say, 10,000 years, give or take a couple of thousand. So what happens before that? Before that, human beings are nomadic. They travel in small tribes, which means they can't get epidemics, very rare. And everybody knows how to do everything, meaning, you know, John can hunt and John can gather and John can build a shelter and Mary can do all those things too. It's a society based on individual capabilities, you know, that work together, but in a kind of loose way. Now, they discover that wheat is good. You can make bread out of it. And they gather this wild wheat, triticum dicocoides, in the field. But there's a problem. Because when they bring it back to their cave, all of the seeds fall down on the way. Because the seeds are too big and heavy. So what are they going to do? So they say, first of all, we can plant the stuff. Then we'll have it next to the cave. So they plant it there. And next year it grows and it's good. And they've got it and they don't have to carry it. Then they say, oops, the neighbors are going to come and take our wheat or the animals. We better build a fence around this. And then they say, this is my territory. You can't come here. Sora is already starting. And then they say, you know what? These seeds are too big. Let's breed them in a way that to make them smaller and more convenient. And that process is continuing until today. And it's all to do with digestion and food, because it's about what we eat and needing to plant stuff and owning that stuff. But it's to do with something else as well. It's to do with identity and territory. Mm-hmm. Because you say, okay, you know, we're going to plant this wheat. That's agricultural revolution. Now, that means we're not going to be nomadic anymore. We have to be here next year.
Mm.
We're going to have to build a house, and we have to going to build a fence, and we're going to have to say, we are the hukukukus that live over here, and you are not.
Mm.
And the fact that we have the nice land by the river, and you have the crap land in the middle of the desert, well, that's your problem. Now, the world still functions like that because there's no overpopulation in the world. That is a myth. Overpopulation is only by the water. If you look at the satellite image, you know, and you'll see in the USA, everybody is living on the, by the sea or by the rivers. The deserts are empty. There's plenty of room on the planet. But everybody wants to be in the good place by the water where they can grow their wheat in whatever way. Whoever has that will flourish. Whoever doesn't have that, you know, will be in poverty. But I don't care about you because I am part of the Hukukuku tribe who got the river first. That's my identity. From that starts all the wars and all the territory and all the I have and you don't have and all the imbalance of food that is happening in the world today. And along the way, over the 10,000 years, people are improving to feed more people because when you have a nice little farm like that by the water, you need to make more kids. If you're nomadic, you carry one or two kids on your shoulder, that's good. But now you need somebody to work the farm and to guard and to grind the wheat and to do that and that and that. And you're living in one place, you are prone to disease. Your wheat is prone to disease. You have more kids to feed. And now you're in a slavery to your wheat, which is what we are till today. And there's one thing that just loves that, and that is fungus.
Yeah, ergot came to my mind, and you mentioned fungus at the same time.
So the fungus says, oh, look at that. There's wheat over here in the barn sitting here with a bit of damp. I'm going to eat that. And that fungus is going to cause candida, which is the root of sora. Not leprosy. I've proved that. And you've seen that video, I think. So, you know, sora is not leprosy. It's a fungus. So that takes a ride, okay. But the basic concept is, this is my land, that's your land, I am me, you are you, and therefore, you know, instead of being one together, one universal soul, we are now broken down into tribes and individuals, those who have more and those who have less. And on the way, the wheat develops for convenience. They say, oh, we made the smaller wheat. Now let's make the tastier wheat, the cheaper wheat, the whiter wheat, the greener wheat, the nicer wheat. And all that is for convenience. I have a saying that is, Sora is the mother, convenience is the mother of Sora. You have a car, you have shoes, you have a comfortable chair, you have I don't know what. All of that is for convenience. And that convenience is what breeds Sora, and Sora breeds the need for convenience. Those nomadic people did not have convenience. They just knew how to live in those conditions in the here and now. But, you know, when you have convenience, for instance, you have a nice flat with air condition. It's convenience. So, you know, that's going to give you a nice thing, and it's going to take away a lot of freedom too at the same time. So having green striped wheat that's cheap and easy to produce and sings and dances, you know, it's convenient, and it's going to take a price off your digestive system.
Oh,
Brilliant.
so beautifully
So
said.
good.
Identity and territory. Like I give up my identity for my territory.
Exactly. And this is what breeds syphilis and psychosis, because you've got the sora in the beginning. You have a territory, you've got sora. You say, I am me, you are you, don't bother me, I'm by the river. But then the other people come and they say, no, we're going to attack you and take away all the stuff you have. That is syphilis. And on the other side, the other people are accumulating way too much wheat, more than they need. The barns are over full to bursting. That is psychosis.
That is
So, you
this.
know,
Such a
you've
beautiful
got
way. Such
it's
a beautiful way
basically
to say it. It really is, honestly.
just loved it. I can listen to you for hours. And this also tells us that you can you talk about your dynamic school? Why I so want to. One day I will register to your master
I look
course. I have
forward
to.
to that. Look, Dynamo School. I remember the journey because I was teaching homeopathy in schools in England, and one day, sometime in 1986, I decided to teach paragraph one of the organon, 1984, and nobody had ever taught me an organon lesson before, and I spoke about paragraph one for a whole 10 minutes. And I thought that was amazing. You know, I was impressed with myself. About 10 years later, they invited me to a seminar in Mumbai, and I talked about paragraph one for 4 days. And most of the people remained, so I don't think it could have been too
Of course.
bad.
Slowly from that, the dynamics developed. I had small groups of teaching, and they asked me to do a year's course, and then it turned into 2 years. And now, I had my three last courses of dynamics. One was in Ireland, one in Japan, and one in Israel. They wouldn't let me go, so it went on for 6 years. Instead of the 3 years, I just by demand I stayed on. There's an endless amount of study and to go deeper and deeper into homeopathy. And I love that. I love being with the same group of people over a few years because we take an amazing journey together and I just watch them getting potentized, blowing their mind again and again, and becoming really great homeopaths. And this is not just philosophy. Look, when I say philosophy, I have a rule in philosophy. Everything I teach in philosophy must become practical in the end. There can't just be castles in the air. There has to be, okay, you've got this lofty thought, the king and the queen sat on the throne. How are you going to use that? How are you going to use that in practice, you know? So I teach all that as much as I can, but it's also materia medica in depth. I have no interest in teaching lots of remedies. My interest is to understand through teaching a remedy how they can learn to analyze, synthesize, and crack the code of a patient.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles. Cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
that is what 4R is about. You know, I'll explain that in a moment. But basically, that journey in Dynamis is taking a group of people and going as far and deep as you can into materia medical philosophy, clinical, practical, all that stuff to really raise your level as a homeopath, potentize your homeopathy. So, you know, we started working on it 10 years ago with the help of Manny Norland to turn it into a video course. At the time, there was no Zoom and nothing like that. So we videoed it and we made it a course, and the first one is now finished. And I'm so happy because people love it. You know, I didn't know how well that would work, but the feedback we're getting is tremendous. And then I do a lot of live online sessions with them to complement just the video. So it's not just old videos, but I share thoughts that are, because I'm evolving all the time. So it's worked out tremendously, and you know, I'm so happy people have really got a lot of learning and joy from that. So
beautiful.
We're starting a new one in October, but you know, you can join anytime and do it at your own pace. But it's very well edited in bite-sized lessons, you know, 20 minutes, 20 minutes. You do what you can when you can, but it's all there. It's nicely edited.
Beautiful.
The 4R, which is like grew out of that, because at a, look, when I started homeopathy in the first year, I said to myself, okay, I'm going to read all of Kent's Materia Medica. That was my mission. I think I might have got until Ethusia because it was so boring. I mean, I tried, I struggled. But I'd read one paragraph of Kent. By the second one, I'd forgot what he said in the first one. So I'm like, you know, I gave up. But I didn't give up in my heart. It's just that I wasn't ready yet. Because you start reading Crotalus Horridus, not Crotal, Croton Tiglio, okay? And Kent starts, Croton Tig produces eruptions which desquaminate, and then they fill with liquid. And then the liquid dries up and they, you know, and they start peeling. And you're like, oh, my God, you know, I can't remember this. And yeah, slowly over the years, I learned to crack the code. I learned to crack the code of Materia Medica and of cases and of Kent. Because Kent was a master in giving you the code without telling you the answer. He just put the suggestions there. And I believe it was subconscious. He just, when he taught the remedy, he connected to it and it came out. And there is a code hidden in little things like that, just like a patient who you don't understand. Slowly, I learned how to crack that code through one thing only. At a certain stage in my homeopathic evolution, I realized not to think of the remedy during the consultation. This was due to a teacher I had called Joseph Reeves, who taught me, put the Materia Medica and the repertory out of the clinic and concentrate on one thing only, on understanding that patient. I did it. And then I would sit all weekend working, looking at the cases until I understood the case without thinking of the remedy. Now, why am one of the reasons I'm not a great fan of the kingdom and all these other methods that are prevalent today? Because, you know, kingdom sensation, I don't know what. It doesn't matter what the method is. The method is saying to you, look at that patient, and as soon as you start to understand the patient, start thinking, what's the remedy here? Is there a mineral? Is it the animal? Is it the number 722? Is it, you know, is it this rubric? Is it that rubric? The moment you're doing that, you're not concentrating on the here and now who that patient is. So by doing that, I started to slowly understand how the whole patient fits together. And never thinking of a remedy before I crack the code of the patient, of how they work, only then starting to think about the remedy. If all these systems of whatevers started to think about their systems only after they totally understood the patient, I'd be much more happy with them. But they don't. The practitioners, the students are straight away thinking, oh, look, this is an animal. Is it a kangaroo or is it a mammal or is it a whatever?
Mm.
Not my game. But by doing this, I got pretty good at cracking the code. Then I realized you can crack the code of a remedy in the same way. So the whole game with 4R and the remedies I teach in Dynamis, it's not about you going to learn Illumina. That's a side benefit. So you'll know Illumina. That's great. When you see Illumina cases, one out of 500. Mm. The idea is to teach you how to crack the code. Mm. And then Kent becomes super interesting because suddenly you realize that eruption that is filling up with liquid and disquaminating and blowing up and drying and all that is the key to the remedy. It's hidden in there, and Kent puts it right in front of your eyes and says, let's see you crack that, you know, and understand what's going on over
amazing.
Here.
Amazing, amazing.
Yeah. So it's actually a lesson in code cracking. It's not really a lesson in Materia Medica. And this is why the students are loving it, because they're feeling that they're getting potentized along the way. Mm. And it's a challenge for me because I haven't prepared the whole of Kent. I just do one remedy as I go along. And I'm saying up till now, I've done 16 and I've cracked 16. I know I've cracked them in a way that's not been cracked before. Mm. And my question is, can I do number 17? I don't know. You know, I'm waiting for that remedy that is beyond my capability. And that will be a joy too.
Yeah. It's absolutely fantastic. And I have to say, for those interested in the 4R series, please do share how they may get access.
You just go to dynamis.edu. I think it's on that. That's my website, dynamis.edu. And there you'll see, you know, the link to all my courses. I'm pretty sure it's there as well. And you can write to us and we'll link you. We have a whole series of courses also on Teachable, but you can get all those links. The main one you have to remember is dynamis.edu for education. And that will lead you to all our courses, or you can write to us and get on that. So far there have been four series of 4R, meaning I've got from the first remedy was abrotanum. Now, how many times have you given abrotanum?
Oh, yeah. The question.
Over
20 years, probably about 20 times, actually. No
in
more.
20 years. That's pretty good, and that's more than most. But there's a code to abrotanum. You can crack it and understand it. So I started with abrotanum and finished with ammonium carb. Number 16, that's four remedies in each series. And ammonium carb is just, you know, each one of them is such an amazing remedy. And I'm deliberately going along the alphabet so I don't pick the low-hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. You know, so I take what's coming my way. So, you know, I mean, remedies like aloe, ethusia, agaricus, you know, remedies I don't know, remedies I thought I know, beautiful codes in there. Yeah.
They are. And actually, for those who want to know, so I've got 13 here at the moment, but series 1 of 4R was abrotanum, acetic acid, aconite, Actaea osmosa. And then we had series 2 of 4R, which was Aeschylus hip, Ethusa, Agaricus, Agnus castus. And then series 3, which was Ailanthus, Elytris farinosa, Allium sepa, Allosoc. And series 4, I only have Illumin, but I believe Illumina was...
Illumina, ammonium carb, and I can't remember what the one that came before ammonium. Ambergris. You'll find it all on my website. And if you want more about that, you know, the wheat and the fungus and all that, there's a course there, and there's lots of courses there. Check it out. You'll like them. So yeah, but. You know, and thank you for helping me, you know, let people know about that. I appreciate it.
No, absolutely.
They need to know. They need to know because we want, at this moment in time, we have
so many teachers, and I think it is very important for us homeopaths to actually find the teacher that is our teacher and we want to learn, because we need to ground ourselves. There's so much going on in homeopathy because everyone is taking charge of their health. Everyone wants to come back to natural remedies, natural medicine. And we as homeopaths have a huge responsibility to take care of them in the best way possible. And there we have to educate ourselves from and learn from the best teachers in the world. And I absolutely loved these 2 hours. I don't know where the time went. I could sit here and listen to you for next 2 days even. It was my honor and pleasure as a homeopath that I could spend these 2 hours with you, Jeremy, and hopefully there is a lot to come. You mentioned, I'm sorry, Atik, I'm talking so much, but you mentioned that you didn't write the books 20 years ago, but we are thankful to you that you are writing them now. You can teach other practitioners to help those patients, but the generations that are going to come and are going to study homeopathy, they need the wealth of knowledge that you have accumulated throughout those years.
That's my feeling too, which is why I'm dedicating myself to that, you know. And I had to, the organon is the main peak, because look, a lot of people are put off from the organon because it's heavy, Germanic, difficult language, it's not divided in chapters, it's not indexed, it's difficult to deal with. But I tell you, all the answers are there. You know, there's hardly a question I can ask in homeopathy where that is not answered in the organon. So I'm just trying to put it in a way that is current and modern and contemporary without missing out any of the main ideas, you know?
I love your approach. You know what it's just reminded me of? It's reminded me of going back to the Quran or the Torah or the Bible, going back to the root, going back again and again, that's the foundation, and then presenting it. And that's progressive, because what you're doing is very progressive. So I just was thinking about how you are coming across and the things that you've been saying and sharing through your series and the teaching that you have, and it's progressive. It's progressive homeopathy, but it's tangible. You answered it yourself. It's not like, here's the philosophy, bye-bye, see you later, good luck. It's like, well, hang on a minute. Now let's take it down a notch. That's the high level. Let me now grab it for you and bring it down and hand it to you so you to say, oh, I understand. I get it. I accept it. It's so nice, right, isn't it, Nyla?
And to see it, the best thing is then, you know, when you learn a paragraph, you learn a remedy, and then you see it in practice, you know. And the important thing in teaching, like in Dynamis, I put an emphasis on seeing patients for the long term. That means I want the students to see that next prescription and that next prescription, because that is where the key is. So it's not like I see a patient and goodbye. It's 2-3 years at least of following on with the patient and seeing how all that manifests in practice.
It's been wonderful. And we will talk to you very, very soon.
Thank you so much. Okay. Well, have a great rest of the evening and see you next time, and carry on with your good work.
Thank you so very much.
My pleasure.
Bye now.
I do hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Tune in every week for inspiring conversations, bringing you all things health and well-being to your radio and podcast apps.
The more exposure the Homeopathy Health Show receives, the better for homeopathy around the world.
And please do support the show by clicking follow on our socials.
You can find us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk and on Facebook and Instagram at Homeopathy in Practice. Do give us a follow on there. Let's promote the voice of homeopathy around the world together. Until next time, stay safe and take care.